why not sail back to the UK, then just go and see family? And that's from Jerome Hebert on YouTube.
Well, Jerome, that is the million-dollar question. You're not the only person to ask that. And it's a good question, but where do we start to answer it?
Hello, I'm Liz.
And I'm Jamie.
Welcome to Follow the Boat, in which we discuss what it's really like to give it all up to live on a boat.
And go travelling around the world. We've been doing it since 2006, and we're still at it.
Each week we talk about our latest YouTube video.
And about boats, sailing, travel, or anything else which floats into our heads.
And if you leave a comment we like, we'll give you an answer and a name check. Peace and fair winds. I suppose we should explain why he's asking that. It's because we've had a lot of problems with visas and where to go next and countries being closed. And we mentioned the fact that we're trying to organise what we're doing this year and include a trip back by air to the UK.
Yes, and we do know plenty of people who have done what Jerome suggested, which is to turn around and head back to the Mediterranean. And I must admit, actually, there are plenty of places that we saw on our way here I'd love to revisit.
Yes.
But we want to discover new places, for starters.
Yeah.
I think the main answer to the question is it would take months and months and months.
I think it would take a year.
At least a year. More. Because the thing is, Jerome, we have to take into consideration seasons. So, for example, were we to cross the Indian Ocean on the Northern Hemisphere, we can only do that at in the first half of the year, so basically from January until April time.
Yeah, that's probably even too late to leave Thailand. You should really be leaving about February latest.
Yeah. So things like seasons obviously get in the way. I think all that is compounded by the whole pandemic issue and the fact that many of these countries are now far more regulated in the way that they allow cruisers into their countries.
I think we might be allowed in at the moment, but the big problem is that we don't know what changes are afoot. We know that COVID keeps changing, and at the moment Omicron is fairly benign, but we could get a really nasty one, and then they could all close their borders again and we'd be halfway there. By the way, home isn't the Med, it's the UK. Just getting to the Med is only part of it.
And by the way, yeah. Can I just say, home is Esper.
Exactly.
Because I did say this myself, I think in a podcast last week or in one of our episodes, I said I want to go home and visit my family. And I use that term simply because my parents still live in my hometown where I grew up. But really, we have to remember that home is our boat. Everything we own is on this boat. And returning to the UK would only ever be a visit to see family because we don't have anywhere to live. We would be putting upon my parents, probably. And so, yeah, we should get that clear.
Yeah.
The other thing, of course, is that it's bloody cold in the UK.
I know. Even in the summer, it's cold. It's fine just to go back for a visit. But even in August, we can get bloody cold, certainly at night, because it's never cold here.
I have no desire to take the boat back to the UK. And no desire at all. I would love to revisit some of those Western European regions, Portugal and the northwest corner of Spain, for example. I'd love to do that again on Esper, because I've done it before on the other people's boats, but it'd be great to take you there. But no, it's not part of the plan. It would take a long time, a lot of admin. I think going up the Red Sea would be really problematic.
That's assuming we went that way. There is the other way, which is across the Pacific, through the Panama and across the Atlantic. Whichever way we went, it's going to put a lot of strain on the boat. The boat would, by the time we arrived at our destination, which we'll call the UK, will definitely need a good overhaul, a massive amount of work done on it. And while we can do that here reasonably easily, it's the cost of trying to do it in the UK would be astronomical, and keeping the boat in the UK, all of the things, it's just completely impractical to do it. So that's not going to be happening anytime soon.
No, I think, as you said, it's far more practical to find somewhere to leave Esper in Southeast Asia and fly back.
Yes. Yes, yeah, so sorry about that. We will not, and I hope you now understand why we will not be going back to the UK on the boat. And this is why most cruisers don't. This is what most people look for. They look for somewhere to leave their boat, which is why we all know about where the marinas are, because most insurance companies insist that you can't leave your boat at anchor unattended. So you need to find a marina or a haul out yard to leave your boat while you fly home. That, of course, does bring up another question of carbon footprint. We shouldn't be flying, should we, in the ideal world?
No, don't even go there. No, that's not a discussion I particularly want.
No, I don't want it either. So, yes, we will be flying home at some point this year, once we know when, where, how, what, why. So, just to let everybody know, today is
sunny.
Tuesday.
Yes, today
it's
is sunny.
Sunny. It's sunny. It wasn't yesterday. It was terrible.
Oh, my God.
My God, but that's another story. Today is Tuesday, the 12th of April. I'm not going to say where we are, because I think it's kind of irrelevant to these chats. We're in the cockpit of Esper. But if anyone does want to know where we are, it's the 12th of April, and they can find out, can't they?
They can. In fact, if you were on YouTube recently, I posted up a picture of Esper and said, does anyone know where we are today on this date? And I said the clue was our MMSI number, 2350618.
Where did you post this, by the way?
This was in YouTube community.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if anyone's not aware, not only can we post up videos, we can also post up posts. Mm. So little simple surveys and pictures and just a little, you know, paragraph comment. Mm. So it's a little bit like Facebook, I suppose.
It tends to be real time as well, doesn't it? And so if you look across the top, you'll see tabs, and there's a drop down tab that's called communities.
And if you are subscribed to our channel, and make sure you click that notification bell, I say this every week, but it is so important, then you will get notified when we post something up. So I posted up our MMSI number.
Yep.
Don't ask me what MMSI number stands for. I did know, and I have just I've forgotten already. Someone out there will know and correct us. But it's a unique number that is assigned to every single boat.
And we have one in the description of every single video that we post.
Yes. Now, there are a couple of websites you can go to which track in real time every single MMSI number, providing they have reached a base station. So this is using AIS, which again, all commercial traffic should have, and many cruisers also have.
Commercial traffic doesn't always have it though, does it? As we have discovered.
Not right here, no. We were coming down the coast the other day and I could see four ships over the horizon, or on the horizon, and only one on AIS. Mm. And as they got closer, none of them appeared on AIS. Mm. So AIS is just this identification system that allows us on the boat to see other boats within our vicinity. But also, you at home can go to a website and look at all the traffic around the world in real time as they update their position. Now, it does depend on base stations, as I say, around the coast, and there aren't any base stations here.
Ah.
But what you've been doing is using the Marine Traffic app.
Yes.
And that allows you, when you have internet connection, to force a manual update on our position.
Yes, so it's called On Course, and I keep that app on the phone. And when we need to, we update it. Did it yesterday. Mm. So I think it should have where we are right now today. So the MMSI number is really useful. But you can also, I believe, locate us just using the name of the boat. So SY Esper.
Actually, if you put in Esper in the search engine, you'll find there are a lot of boats come up. I think we are the only private vessel called Esper. But there are lots of boats out there called Esperanza and Esperito and so on.
So we are E-S-P-E-R. So use that or the MMSI number, which is in the description of the video.
Yep.
So that's where we are right now. Okay, so going to that last episode that came out, what, 2 days ago? Sunday? Mm-hmm. It was called Kicked Out and Nowhere to Go. And it was filmed in Sabah, just as we were coming into Tawau. And the whole point of the video was that we had to leave. We already know, you already know, we had to leave Malaysia. We'd been told they would no longer extend the visas, that we had to go, and they didn't really care where we went. So it was up to us to decide what to do. And we came up with a plan to go to Indonesia, and we would check in at Kalimantan, take it from there.
I think we should step back a bit and explain that During the first half of the pandemic, Malaysia was very good to us.
They were.
They allowed us to stay, to renew our visa. And I think a couple of times we actually sort of lapsed on the visa and they just said, don't worry, we'll deal with it. You know, when this is all over, then we'll deal with you. However, halfway through the pandemic, the Malaysian government decided that they were going to get rid of all illegal immigrants. Something happened up on high,
yes,
and an edict was passed down to all of the state governments to basically get together all of the illegal immigrants, those that weren't registered, didn't have passports. And of course, we have to remember there are a lot of Filipinos, Indonesians and so on who work in and around Malaysia.
Yes, and a lot of them were rounded up in places like KL and put into camps because they didn't have passports or proper identification cards. But of course, in that trap fell quite a lot of yachties.
Yes, and yeah, we were kind of caught up in this. And I think you were saying the other day, weren't you, that quite often we find as yachties, when it comes to our relevance, especially within local politics, we're way down on the list. You know, we are few and far between, ultimately, and when you put us together with the population of all the working immigrants in a country.
We're tiny.
We are tiny.
We don't figure at all in any kind of bureaucratic thinking. So we, by default, fell into this because we had extended visas, but they wouldn't extend them anymore, which meant basically we were stateless and there illegally.
Yeah.
So that was that towards the end of 2020?
I think so. Yeah.
A year ago.
But so the argument, the Malaysian government's argument was, right, we give you 30 days to fly back home.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that for many yachties, ourselves included, this is our home.
Yeah.
We don't have somewhere to fly back to. Moreover, were we to fly to the UK, we wouldn't have been able to have returned to Malaysia.
That was a massive problem for all of us. We all need to get back to our boats. And at that stage, and it was 2020. We had no idea if we'd be allowed back. And imagine if we had gone.
Well, if we had gone,
Still there.
I noticed a headline in the news only the other day that Sabah is just about to receive its first international flight. And that is April 2022.
Yes.
So we could have been stuck putting upon my poor old parents for a year or more.
One of us would have been dead by now, that's
I think
for sure.
So. I think we would have killed each other.
Yeah. But we know a lot of yachties that had to do that, and they've been away from their boats for a long, long, long time, haven't they?
We know yachties that left their boat at anchor and have been away for a long, long time. Meanwhile, there were Langkawi was particularly bad. Now, Langkawi in Malaysia is a sailing hub.
Yes.
There are at least three marinas there. There are haul-out facilities there, brokers, there's a Chandler's.
It's a tax-free island, isn't it? So you get cheap alcohol, which is a big magnet for many yachties, and it's good to import stuff.
Yeah, but many of those people there were forced out.
They were.
And the only option for those that wanted to stay on their boat was to go up to Thailand and pay many thousands of dollars for the privilege. Marinas emptied, boat yards emptied. I mean, literally in one fell swoop, they pretty much obliterated Langkawi's reputation as a cruising destination overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were many disgruntled people.
There were a lot. Thailand received most of those people. And I know Indonesia, I think, Nongsa got some of them. But most of them went to Thailand because it's closer, it's easier to get to. Mm. And although they welcomed them, you had to pay through the nose to get there.
Well, that's Thailand for you.
That's Thailand, good old Thailand, yeah. So, that was really bad. And it was about to happen to us. It was about to happen to quite a few other people. But three people stepped in and helped us. That was Alvin, where we are. And James at Pangkor Island, and Sazli, who runs the Sail Malaysia, and they spoke to the government on our behalf, didn't they?
Yeah, I call them the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
And if it wasn't for these local people, who of course have vested interests in sailing and the sailing community, because their businesses are based around that.
Well, they appreciate that we bring money into the country. We're spending all our money in Malaysia, not in some other country, and paying for marinas and all kinds of refits and all of that stuff and going to restaurants, blah, blah, blah. we're actually quite good for them. We're better than someone who's just on holiday for 2 weeks. We're here for months at a time, living here and spending money.
So, yeah, I mean, the amount of money that we do, when we haul out, do you think about all those haul out fees, the local people that you employ and so on? Yeah. So although we're very a small community, in terms of our financial contribution to the tourism dollar, it's significant.
It is, yeah.
And the Holy Trinity know this, they could see this, and that's why they were fighting our cause. But further up on the ladder, they were, I don't know, we were told that actually it was all political. Yes. You know, there wasn't even any logic to what was going on, but we don't question that. But I think even the Holy Trinity were getting so fed up with the situation because they, you know, they just weren't being heard either.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it can be argued that, as I said, overnight, Malaysia pretty much destroyed its reputation within the cruising community.
Yes, it did. It's a small community and everybody talks. So, yeah, it didn't do them any favours. We, however, were one of the lucky ones because we managed to stay for long enough and extend gradually until the big shock blew over, and we did lots of letters, and you know, it's all been documented here on one of the boat. We were finding we were allowed to stay, but we had to keep from then on renewing the visas
at great cost. Yes. As well, you know, it was costing every time we did this,
cost money, and it was very anxious. It was a very anxious time. So you'd get to the end of your visa point and then you'd be told, no, you can't. Yes, you can. No, you can't. And the last minute, yes, you can extend. That went on for a year. So we were living on our nerves. And the final one, they said, no, you can't extend. And that's why we've just done that great big journey around the whole of Sabah with an ESCOM security convoy helping us. And we were on our way to Indonesia because we had... Finally, they'd said enough, you can't stay. So there we were in Tawau. And one of the things I said to you about last week's episode was, why isn't there much footage of Tawau? And we realised it's because we were so anxious about it. Not anxious about leaving, because we knew we were going to leave. But then something else happened, which was, as we say in the video towards the end, Indonesia then decided to close the ports because coronavirus, the Omicron version, had hit. And whereas 20 ports had been opened, they reduced it to 2. And so where we had planned to check in, both closed. So we had no idea, having checked out, what we were going to do next. It was a very anxious time.
The point is that in the video, that I don't know how much that comes across, that it was a very anxious time.
Yeah.
Because what were our options? You know, at the time, Philippines was still closed. All the surrounding countries were still closed. We had to leave. So we should explain, we couldn't have just turned round back to Sabah and checked back in.
No, they wouldn't let us.
Because you can't do that. When you leave a country, you have to arrive in another country and get your port clearance.
Yeah.
And then when you leave that country, you are given a port exit, which you then present to the new country.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work by just checking out and checking back in again and starting all over again.
No.
So once we'd committed to this journey and we were on our way down, that was it. You know, what other options did we
have? Yeah, Malaysia was closed, so we couldn't go back in. The only option that did occur right towards the end was that Philippines started to open its borders. So we'd gone all this way and we thought, oh, well, we could chance it in the Philippines. But we'll talk about this in more detail in the next video. That was the situation we were in, and we just wanted to get it across right now in the podcast how difficult and stressful that situation was. We were all in a great deal of stress, and as we left, we had no idea what was going to happen. Did you know we have a blog? Followtheboat.com. Come over and have a look. It has all our podcasts, all our videos, and lots of other special bits, including a shop. Yes, we sell t-shirts, hats, all the usuals. It's really good clobber. So come along, have a look at followtheboat.com. One of the subjects that's really been exercising a lot of the people who comment on both Facebook, Instagram and YouTube is this idea that the remote places we go to, should we be telling people where they are or not? What we said on Facebook was, should we keep remote places like this secret? If we shout about them, will it encourage development, damage the reefs and upset local people, or will it improve life and allow atolls like these to prosper? So we've been to a lot of very beautiful, very remote places over the years, particularly in this part of the world. And you quite often get criticised for bringing them to public's attention, don't you?
I've had this out with a number of people. In fact, one person I can think of in particular, who's a friend. This has been an ongoing theme. You shouldn't be advertising these places. People should be discovering them for themselves. I mean, where do you start with that kind of attitude?
A little bit selfish, a little bit elitist, do you think?
I met a surfer, and she was in her 60s now, but she had discovered the Mentawai Islands down Sumatra in the 1970s. And there we were in the 21st century showing the public, the viewing public, this beautiful place.
Yes. These are the islands west of Sumatra.
Yeah. And again, her argument was her and her boyfriend at the time, back in the 70s, had real trouble finding this place. But when they discovered it, they felt they'd discovered this great place that no one knew about. Mm-hmm. And so, and she had this sense of ownership, I felt, that it was like it was hers. She discovered it.
What about people who live there? That have always lived there for hundreds and thousands of years. It's their place, isn't it? I would have said it was their place, first and foremost.
Of course it is.
I'm going to read out a few comments. First, from a friend of ours, Brendan Poynting, who has his own unique way of talking. He's
a
surfer.
And he's a surfer, yes. Yeah.
And this is what Brendan says. I'm not going to do his accent, although I'd like to try. If someone feels they need to share their secret place with others in an age where you'll be needing a username, vax certificate, password, which must be 5 letters, 6 numbers, 7 symbols, etc., to go to that secret place, then by all means share it. So as us true freedom fighters have absolutely nothing left on this planet to strive for, that's kind of the same thing as your 60-year-old surfer was saying, isn't it?
Okay, so there is an argument that surfers are quite often the first people to discover places.
Yeah.
However, I'd be interested to know, I should ask Brendan this to his face when I next see him, of all the places he has surfed, how many did he discover himself or how many was he told about by someone else?
Yeah.
What's the difference? There is a difference there.
There is, and since there are little resorts there and hotels and things like that, I think probably more people know about it than people imagine. Herb Desson has got a slightly different take. He says, disclose, but round to the degree, which gives a 12,000 square kilometre search area. It's quite funny. I think world is such a small place nowadays with the internet. You just say the name of it, you've just got to Google it, and there it is, you can find it. That's how we find places. We find places on our charts when we're trying to plan somewhere and on Google. That's what we do. Paul R.G. Haley, it's a difficult call, I think. There is no doubt more visitors are likely to spoil a place quicker, but the tourist money might help the people who live there financially if they need it. It must be the locals' call, I guess.
Yep. I think it's the locals' call, and obviously it would then be up to the local government to control that. Now, I think it was in last week's podcast you had mentioned how you only have to look at Thailand to see how it had raped its coastline, which is very true. And a lot of that, I think, went unregulated. You only had to see the rows upon rows of speedboats lined up on beaches, piling in 30 passengers apiece, and then all heading towards some offshore island. Now, who's controlling that? There's no control there. It's a money grab. And that, I think, is wrong.
And it's a money grab probably not for the people who lived there originally in that swampy island.
Yeah. So, yes, it is definitely up to the locals for sure.
There's two more I want to read. Maria Thompson. She says development will reach these places eventually anyway. The entitled want access to these places for themselves, and once it starts, the money it brings motivates faster development. Humans can leave nothing and nobody alone, even here in the UK. Well, that's a bit of a downer. That is one way of looking at it. And sure, that will happen. But the opposite conclusion is from Ken Henderson, who says it can be done. I visited the Galapagos a couple of years ago. Entry is very strictly controlled to prevent ruining the islands and the wildlife, and the rules, such as not approaching within 2 metres of the wildlife, are also very strictly enforced. So there you go.
It's up to the will of the people, the will of the government, and not up to those visitors. And I think entitled is exactly that word, that word, and this is the attitude that gets up my nose, actually, is these people that feel they have some kind of ownership over these places because they discovered it first. And that is true. That is the true definition of entitled. And that, for me, that attitude is just wrong.
Yeah.
I think also because we've been criticised, because we're putting it on YouTube, many thousands of people watch these episodes. You have to remember that 99.9% of the people watching YouTube are doing so from the comfort of their armchair, their bed, or wherever they happen to be watching on their phone and maybe on their smart TV. They have no intention of visiting these places. Perhaps they would love to on paper, but will they actually fly out and get down to the east coast of Sabah and spend 2 weeks going to these remote places? It is highly unlikely.
Yes, and that's exactly what William C. Robertson on Instagram said, actually. He said, I think that a lot of places that you and other cruisers go to would be difficult, time-consuming, and or too expensive for most of us to even dream about visiting. So thank you, William. You've actually absolutely got it right there. I think on the contrary, what we're doing is we're opening up people who can't travel to these places. They're seeing them. They wouldn't see them otherwise. So I don't think it's a bad thing. And I continue to think that.
And the other argument I always have is look at how long man and woman has documented their travels. Mm. We have had hundreds of years worth of travel journals and documentaries, travel programs. We've been doing this since millennia, you know, for a long time. YouTube is just another medium in which we get to tell our travel stories.
Yes, exactly. And anecdotally, everyone that we meet and talk to wants us there.
Yeah, now I've got to pull you up on that because you did say that last week as well. You're right, actually. You used the correct word. That is anecdotally. We have no statistics that show that all local people want their place to be developed. Mm. But certainly from our experience, and we only have to think of where we've just been recently, how welcomed we were by these people and how desperate they are for more people to visit.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Okay, so that's that discussion. Unless anyone's got something completely different to say on the matter, I think we'll close that one now. What do you think?
I think our discussions are always open.
Okay, yeah, you're right. So there might well be something else to be said on the subject. But it's a good one, and it's a perennial, and doesn't seem to be an agreement. The people who don't agree, they tend just to say no, 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 don't say why. Of the comments I've read, there are lots of people who want them opened up.
Do you agree, or maybe you disagree? Leave a comment for us on Twitter at Follow the Boat.
Did you say that you had a couple of comments you wanted to bring up?
No.
Oh, I thought you did.
Well, I did, but actually, the couple that I did have, you had said, no, we're not going to talk about where we are, because they were related to where we are. But Ross D did say, and this is obviously on our last episode, 297, what stunning scenery, you are so blessed. Yeah. To which I replied, wait till you see Sulawesi.
Mm. Yes, the east coast of Sabah is stunning. We've done a whole podcast on how brilliantly and beautiful it is.
But wait until you see our episodes on Sulawesi. Because can I just say, and I'm not giving the game away, I think this is the single most beautiful coastline we have ever sailed. And it is also one of the most terrifying.
Yes.
And that is all I'm going to say on the subject. Yes. If you keep watching the episodes and wait until we get to Sulawesi, you'll see exactly what I mean. Daniel Warden, who comments almost every week, always nice to hear from Daniel. He said, 30 days straight on the boat,
!
And again, this is where you'd said in episode 297 that you hadn't got off the boat.
That's right. I didn't get off the boat all the way from Sutra, all the way to Tetuan.
He says, with land in sight, phew, Liz, are you cabin fever resistant? I'd go bonkers. I can't wait to see more of Indonesia. Until then. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that obviously there's the whole COVID thing, but also when you're travelling on the boat, there isn't always a need to get off and go ashore at every single destination. You know, there is plenty to do on the boat, around the boat. We could be swimming around the boat, scraping the underside of the boat. So, yes, it's there's enough to do to keep us occupied.
But it was quite an unusual circumstance because we were going from west to east, and we were only doing day stops. We weren't staying anywhere for any length of time. We had ESCOM with us. It was a matter of going like the clappers all day long, getting there, feeding ourselves, sleeping, getting up and going the next day.
Yeah,
so that's an unusual circumstance. Normally when we do that sort of thing, we stop for 2 or 3 days and we get off and we explore, but we couldn't that time.
Yeah, plus you had a touch of the trots, I think, when we were in Sandakan.
Yeah, so when we got to Sandakan, no, it wasn't the trots. I was sneezing and coughing and I thought everyone's going to think I've got COVID. I don't think it was. I did lots of tests and none of them said I had it. But just in case, I didn't want to go ashore and sneeze over everybody.
Yeah, now I mentioned Sandakan. That's where we had to do our deck fitting repair. So that was one, in fact, the only place that we stayed at for more than one night, I think. Mm. So that was when a few of us went ashore, visited the yacht club and had to do some repairs. Mm. So that was the one chance. But that unfortunately coincided with your sneezy nose.
Not feeling too good. But I just want to say, Daniel, that the theme of this podcast seems to be that this is our home. For me, it's not a challenge to stay on the boat day after day, week after week, because it is my home. It's got everything I need on it. All the things that I want to do, my hobbies, reading, whatever, cooking, all of those things, I do on the boat. So we only go ashore when we're, I don't know, what do we go ashore for? To eat, maybe, to drink, to explore, to spend a little time doing a few other things. But most of the time we are on the boat.
Mm. Editing normally. Editing and repairing. That's what we spend most of our time doing on the boat.
Yes, it certainly does. I think we'll be doing a bit of that today. Anyway, going back now to a recurrent theme, which is we've asked you to let us know if you're getting into sailing, if we've inspired you or anything has inspired you to get into sailing. We've had loads of comments on that. And in this week, I want to particularly reference age to getting into sailing because it comes up all the time.
We did also ask people to put their age as well.
We did. Yeah, we did. Last week we did because people seem to be scared of saying their age and they think that they're too old. So we've got a whole load of comments here, which I could read out in age order, from the youngest to the oldest.
Right.
From Pedro Redondo, Sailing Tulip, he had answered the week before. He's 48, so he was the youngest person that answered. He says, I'm 48, bought my first sailboat a year ago. In this podcast, you focus on a very important topic, age. When I started to watch cruising YouTube channels, I was a bit sceptic about whether I would be too old to follow my sailing dream. You're only 48 now. I must mention that my intention is to sail full-time when I'm 55 or 56. I was always wondering if that would invalidate my plan. Fortunately, persons like yourself show me it's absolutely fine. So that's 48, planning to start at 56. Thank you, Pedro. Then John Lely, 52. 52 years old, just signed on my first boat, a Leopard 40 in the Seychelles. I know you don't like cats, lol.
I did read that. My first thought was, well, we know plenty of happy Leopard catamaran sailors. Leopard, by the way, is a manufactured catamaran from South Africa. So we know quite a few Leopard owners, and they're all smiling and they're all happy. So no problems with that.
It's not that we don't like cats, just that we wouldn't have one, probably.
I don't
always
just
say probably.
Don't go, you just love sticking that one in, and don't you? Because I know that's needling a few people. And you know that I don't necessarily completely agree with you.
Yeah, that's me saying it, not you. You're all right there. You're then planning, John, to sail to the Maldives and then on to Thailand. And you've already spoken to Jack a couple of times at KBL Marina.
Crabby.
Yeah.
Jack is wonderful. He calls himself Jack, but he's a local Thai. His wife, Gay, used to run the restaurant. Lovely family.
Lovely marina.
And a beautiful marina. So now I responded to this and I did say, if you are going via the Maldives first, don't skip through the Maldives quickly. Do try and spend your time there. The way the Maldives works is there are three different types of island. There's inhabited, uninhabited, and resort.
Yes.
So the resort islands, unusually, are actually privately owned. Mm. And that's where you get the five-star resorts. And more often than not, they do not like you to anchor anywhere near them. But if you get in contact with them in in advance, you can sometimes get permission.
Yes, they might charge you a fortune to land on the beach.
They might do, they might
not. Or they
not.
May not, yep. Yes. So officially they regard resort islands as uninhabited, which means we are allowed to visit, because you're not really supposed to go on inhabited islands for... Well, you can go in the daytime and that's it. So yeah, Maldives great.
Yep, and Krabi Marina is a good choice. Yep. We loved our time there.
I hope you enjoy it, John. David Caskey. So it's not too late to pick up the wind and go at 55 plus. Doesn't give us an exact age, but it's 55 plus. I'm looking at a 37-foot full keel double ender. It's a semi project.
That's like Roy's boat, actually.
Yes.
Chaska.
Yeah.
His is 37-foot double ender.
Yeah.
That's still young.
And it will be a project, and you've got loads of time ahead of you. No, he's not. The boat's 37 foot. He's 55 plus.
Yes.
Still young.
Still young.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry. Jeff Griglack, regular commenter. I'm sorry to say that I'm 59.
Oh, too old. No, don't just forget it.
No, he just says, that's not an apology. I just wish I was younger. Don't we all, darling? I bought my first sailing dinghy when I was 22 and have been sailing increasingly larger boats since. My current boat is a 36-foot ketch, yay, which I hope to move aboard soon. I also bought a boat that has solid bones but needed some work, which I'm doing myself, and I'm learning all the systems. Sounds like you're doing exactly the right thing, Jeff. Yeah, good luck with that. So we are now moving into the 60s. No dog runner. Turning 60 this year, caught the sailing bug from YouTube. Scares my wife immensely, as she has had bad trips on boats. She has sworn off my sailing dreams. I long to try and become a coastal cruiser. Reading and learning, praying for the future. No desire to sail alone or with anyone else. Love your relationship and travels. Thanks for sharing. Oh, that's a tough one, isn't it?
It is. We have discussed this before.
Yeah.
And it's a theme that comes up frequently is, you know, one of those partners, could be the husband, could be the wife, who's not into the sailing. And I think the trick is to get them on board a boat on a nice calm day.
Yes.
Or maybe take a holiday to the Caribbean.
Yes, and or the Med or somewhere.
Do a day's charter somewhere exotic with gentle winds.
Yes.
Where it culminates with rum and coke under a palm tree, watching the sunset, to turn that partner onto the benefits and the pleasures of cruising.
The mere idea of just being on a boat. And the other thing I would add to that is for you, no dog runner, to not be the captain. So you enjoy it with her. You have someone else running the boat, because when you're a captain, you get anxious. No matter how much experience you have, you do get anxious. You may shout, you may get a little bit nervy, and that's not going to do your relationship with your wife any good. So have someone else captaining it, even as a friend. Don't take on that responsibility. Just enjoy it with her. And gradually, baby steps, she might suddenly start to think that, no, actually being on a boat isn't that bad. And if all else fails, get a catamaran, because that is like being in a hotel on the water.
I mean, you have to be realistic though, because maybe your wife isn't for turning.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she has made that decision, in which case, if you do want to pursue it, you've got to try and find a happy medium, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I suppose one idea might be a boat share.
Yeah.
So you go into a partnership with a friend and you take it in turns to have that boat, or you sail together, perhaps.
He's talking about coastal cruising, so he's not talking about going across oceans. So they can keep it somewhere in a nice marina that perhaps has lovely facilities. So even just sitting on the boat in the marina, having a gin and tonic and going to the bar itself, just the life of being on a marina is something that she may enjoy, while he can then go out for day sails with friends. There are ways around it. We know people who one partner doesn't like it and the other one does, and they manage to do it, and they have boats. So I mean, the most extreme one was John in Turkey. He just lived on the boat in Turkey and she came out once a year for a week.
Which John's that?
That was Barge John.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, well, good luck. I hope something happens. So we're now going up to, I'm 62, this is wrenching and riding, and sail my 43-foot Dutch-built aluminium boat myself. As long as your body is working, keep moving and disregard the age. Well said. And finally, at the top of this long list is Robert Colvin at 83.
I didn't know people could live that long.
We have met sailors in the 90s, so it's not uncommon. But he doesn't actually sail. He says, I'm 83 and sailed a lot when much younger.
Yeah.
Get terribly seasick, and my skin doctor, who makes a nice living cutting skin cancer off me, tells me to stay out of the sun. So now I ride a bike. And just as in sailing, time constraints, the weather, road direction and conditions are all sort of dictate where you go. But go I shall continue to do. So he says we've both been an inspiration for several years. So it's fantastic, 83, that you're getting out there and you're going places. And I bloody hope we still are.
Yeah, and it just goes to back to that classic healthy body, healthy mind attitude as well, is to stay active. And cycling is something my parents do, who are, you know, in their late 70s now, and they do it frequently as well as walking. And it's one of those low impact activities that keeps them active. But doesn't have all those dangers associated with sailing, which can be quite extreme times.
It's dangerous and it's exhausting. You said cycle. I took it to mean motorbike. I wonder what he does mean.
Ah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he gets to see the world much more quickly on a motorbike than he does on a bicycle.
Yeah. Let us know, Robert. Do you mean a motorbike or do you mean a cycle? Okay, I think that's it for this week, don't you? The wind's picking up here in the Anchorage.
It is picking up, and I just get a bit twitchy now, having had a few close shaves along this coastline. And yesterday's was, can I say?
You can.
Okay, it is the fastest wind speed I've ever seen at sea.
Yes.
At anchor, I've seen faster, but actually at sea, I've never seen winds this extreme. Mm. And there's a possibility it might happen again today.
Yeah, it seems to be blowing up in the afternoon.
So I'm starting to get a little bit twitchy now. And of course, the other thing I need to do is to start putting fuel in the fuel tank and start counting.